Welcome to another message from the heart. Life-changing messages from Pastor Darren Brown, Senior Pastor of Ignite Christian Church.
What is this Valentine's Day thing about? I'm not actually going to talk about love and stuff. I want to talk about unity in the home. But Valentine's Day was actually originally by a guy called St. Valentine. He was a Roman priest, and what happened at the time was there was an edict came down from the Emperor Claudius II to ban marriage. You see, he thought, guys getting married, they don't want to join my army if they're getting married, so I'm going to ban marriage. And that's what he brought, that's the law he brought in to try and sort of help his recruitment drive for his army. But when he banned marriage, Valentine started marrying people in secret as a priest. And so this was quite controversial, as you'd imagine, at the time. When he was exposed and captured, he was beaten and imprisoned, and while awaiting execution, he fell in love with the jailer's daughter. And so he started writing little notes called Valentine notes, right? And his final note that he wrote on February 14th, see the connection, to 270 AD, just before he was executed, he signed off his last note, "Your Valentine." And that's why we write that on our Valentines. Did anybody know this? No, there you go. So Valentine did not write roses are red, violets are blue. Okay? A tap in the garden reminds me of you. Drip, drip, drip. You know, that sort of stuff. Valentine didn't write that sort of stuff. What Valentine did was he wrote notes to someone he loved, and he was executed in the name of love. But today, I don't want to speak about Valentine so much as I want to speak about what the Lord has been working on my heart about, not about romantic love, but about unity in the family. And some of you will immediately go, ouch, that's okay. I'm feeling it too. In a sense, it's kind of the elephant in the room because we don't talk about unity in our families. We sort of gloss over it. And I want to actually address that today because I know, I don't know for a fact, but I just really sense that behind closed doors for many of us, and I'm saying us, not you, I'm saying us, for many of us, we really struggle to maintain unity in our family. There is often a lot of conflict between husband and wife, wife and husband, parents and children, siblings, isn't there, within a family sort of structure. And so that's what I want to talk about today. I'm not talking about love and all those gooey things. I want to directly address something we live with every day, which is unity or lack of unity in our family. Now, think of it this way. I believe this church has an awesome future and that we're going to touch, you know, our area of the world and way beyond, because that's the vision that I have for this church. But nothing will thwart what God is doing in this place like disunity in our families. Nothing. If the devil can attack our families, he will completely negate any effect our church will have. And he will give us a miserable life. How many of you know it's not fun to fight with your husband or wife or children or parents? Is that fun? It's never fun. Why do we keep doing it? It's not fun. But it continues to happen. And, you know what it's like? I'm going to talk very plainly here and probably get in trouble for this. But, you know, we might have a fight Saturday night, you know, and you might have been throwing plates or saying things you don't mean or screaming at the kids or whatever it is you do. But on Sunday morning, we all paint on a happy face and we turn up at church like the Brady Bunch. We're all together. I mean, how many of you ever watched the Brady Bunch and said, that's not what my family looks like? And they're a blended family. So, you know, on Sundays, we paint on a happy face, and don't look so pious because I know we all do it. We've all done it in the past. We all do it from time to time. You're miserable. You're churning inside, but you go to church. Someone says, "How are you going?" "Fantastic." "Oh, yeah, great. Wonderful. And inside, you're dying. You know, your part of you is just fading away inside. I believe that today, more than ever before, we're seeing an attack on our homes and our families. Values long held across society by all people in all cultures through all ages have been sacrificed to appease a minority. You know what I'm talking about. Maybe the same-sex marriage laws did not affect you directly. Maybe the Safer Schools program will not affect you directly. But these and many other forces, from Parliament to divorce courts to songs, movies to Mardi Gras, they're all chipping away at what we call the family. Have you noticed that? They're attacking our families. Even in church, our people are still affected and our families are under threat like never before. And the divorce rate in churches these days is the same as what it is in the world. We're not any different because the devil is attacking our families. The Lord has been showing me how unbelievably disruptive disunity is within the church and within the families. If you've got a Bible, please open to Psalm 133, because this is the great psalm. There's only three verses in it. This is the great psalm on unity. It applies to anything. It says this in verse 1. Behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell together in unity. There's a whole bunch of other stuff there about oil and that sort of stuff. Won't go into that today. But it finishes with this. For there the Lord bestows a blessing, even life forevermore. Can you see that? I believe that God isn't just suggesting unity because it's a good idea. He's not suggesting unity so that you can go home and get some peace and quiet. That's not the reason for unity. God says in that passage there, he says, the Lord commands a blessing, even life forevermore, when you have unity. If you want blessing in your church, have unity. If you want your church to go nowhere and do nothing, keep fighting. If you want your family to have blessing, have unity. Because in unity there, the Lord bestows a blessing. It's not just a case of you get a nicer life or something like, or you get peace and quiet. Unity actually breeds blessing, just as disunity destroys blessing. Does that make sense? It's a spiritual transaction. And I believe one of the great secrets we've had and one of the reasons we're growing so rapidly is that God's got unity here in our leadership all the way down. But it doesn't take much to disrupt unity. It doesn't take much, and I'm going to go into this in a minute, for us to really start to destroy rather than build up in our church. Many of you have lived through disunity in your relationship in the past. Many have experienced divorce and separation. You know how painful it is. If you look in the book of Malachi, the Lord says, I hate divorce. And you know why he says that? Because in divorce, everybody hurts. Everybody hurts except the lawyers. Everybody else hurts. He doesn't say, I hate divorcees. He loves people because he sees people in pain and his heart goes out to them. But I'm telling you, if you've lived through something like that, it is painful. Am I right? It just hurts. And everything gets, you know, the kids hurt, the grandkids hurt, the parents hurt. There's separation, there's people that are not, all your friends hurt. When my friends have gone through a divorce or a separation, I find that I can't, you're not allowed to be in the middle. You're his friends or her friends. Everybody gets divided and everybody hurts. That's why God hates it. Don't ever think that God hates people who've been through a divorce, because he loves them. But he hates the pain that this stuff causes, the disunity. And many of us here, if we're honest with ourselves, are actually living with disunity now in our homes. We may not be out and out separated or something, but a lot of us are struggling to hold it together, even though we love each other. Because unity is not just love. It needs to be, we need to value unity between ourselves above a number of other things, which I'll get to in a moment. In unity, the Lord commands a blessing, but disunity will kill anything. It'll kill a church, a business, a football team, a band, a club, even a family. That's what disunity does. And, you know, forgive me, ladies, for talking about football, because this is where my mind basically is a lot of the time. But I was watching the other day, there's some football teams that are doing really poorly, and they get a new manager in, and suddenly they start to win games. What's changed? The people are the same. He hasn't had enough time to change their whole regime. The only thing that changes is they all get on board with him, and you have unity all of a sudden. And suddenly they break through. It's the same for all of us. Satan loves attacking families because the results are high. Think about it. From his point of view, with a minimum amount of effort, he can ruin a whole family or a whole church. He doesn't have to do much. Think about it. Small issues. It's the small issue. It's the little foxes that spoil the vine, isn't it? You know, small issues like putting out the garbage. I wish I had a dollar for every time Fiona said, garbage needs to be put out again. Right? That's a classic. What about to buy or not to buy? I'll move right on. What about squeezing the toothpaste in the middle? That's the old favorite, but I mean, it is really irritating when you get to the toothpaste and it's all shoved down one end because someone doesn't squeeze from the bottom. What about the battlefield, the incredible tension and problems that result from control of the TV remote? I mean, you know what I'm talking about. This is big. All of these things, they're really small, but they become big. And Satan can turn these little tiny things into a mountain of misery because he brings about disunity. Now, at Ignite, at our church here, we have tremendous unity from the leadership down. But, you know, I don't want to say we have unity in the church when underneath, in the lives of men and women, in between parents and kids and siblings, we have disunity because it's going to filter through. It really does. Behind the Valentine's Day facade and the flowers and the chocolates, who got flowers on Valentine's Day? A few of us. Very good. Who got chocolates? Yes, keep that hand. Who got chocolates? Who got nothing? You old romantics, you. But behind the flowers and chocolates, behind the happy approach to church and happy families and that sort of stuff, many of us here, if we're honest, are hurting like crazy. There's conflict bubbling away in our marriages and homes. And as I said, sometimes husband and wife, sometimes wife and husband, sometimes parents and children, sometimes children and parents, sometimes, you know, brothers and sisters. You know, brothers and sisters, that sibling rivalry is right. It's in the Bible. Look at Jacob and Esau. You know, it's a common one, but it can disrupt the whole unity. And I know, guys, you come to church to feel better, and I'm sorry you're not going to feel better. You know, I'm not here to make you feel uncomfortable or horrible, but I really think we need to talk about this. Is this okay? Okay, good. It may hurt a little, but the end result will be greater blessing. And in fact, it will be blessing off the charts. If we can get unity in our homes, we will be blessed. We will. I cannot begin to solve every individual marriage problem or relationship difficulty in one sermon, but if the Lord has challenged me to speak on this, and it's something we usually hush up, I believe there'll be a blessing at the end. Can you believe that with me? Yes, good. Now, let me confess to you first and foremost that I am not the perfect husband. Do I hear an amen, Fiona? She says I'm wonderful. You can't lie in church, sweetie. But I'm not the perfect husband because I realize I don't give Fiona nearly enough love, barely enough money, and never enough time. I make decisions without her. I'm selfish. I'm way too focused, and I isolate myself at times. Any of you guys here isolate yourself? Do you have a cave? Who has a cave? Yes, me too. Who crawls off into the cave when the going gets tough? Me too. But with all my faults, I know that I love my wife, and I believe that as I yield to the Lord and let him shape my life, that we will see unity and blessing in our home. I was saying to Pastor Keith earlier, Fiona and I are radically different. We are different on every level about everything. And it's a miracle that we are married at all because we're so totally different. I rush into things with great enthusiasm. She holds back and analyzes it. When we order a pizza, it is half meat lovers, half vegetarian. That's, you know, we are so, but in the middle of all that, God takes our differences and he puts them together to somehow make them stronger if we have unity, because we're all different. Who knows that men and women are different? Who's figured that out already? Have you figured that out? It took me a long while, but I figured it out. Let me say this, men and women are different and kids are different to parents as well. We think differently, we speak differently, we act differently. Now, when a man speaks, he's very direct, generally. I speak, you listen, you speak, I listen. When a woman speaks, She can hear every other conversation in the room at the same time. How do you do that? Men have an area of the brain which is called the autopilot center. And while looking you in the eye, while you're speaking, ladies, I can look you in the eye and you will think that I'm taking it all in and understanding, but I'm really thinking about the football score. And I'm going, I can repeat it back to you, but I haven't thought about anything you've said. Women can turn on the waterworks and cry, men stonewall. Ouch, that hurt, didn't it? But this is the way we often go. Men, I must say, we live in the now. Men don't think about consequences. We just do it. We're like Nike. We just do it. That's our big problem. We don't think about where it's going to go. We just act in the now. Women live in multiple time zones. Women can remember everything you've ever said and done in your relationship, carefully catalogued and recalled at a moment's notice in an argument. How do they do that? You see, we are so different, aren't we? Not saying men can do it too, but women are just really good at it. And what about kids? What about relating to children? Now, some kids are really difficult. I mean, we've got Kaylee up there. She's 2 years old. Have you tried to relate to a two-year-old? What's the difference between a two-year-old and a terrorist? You can negotiate with a terrorist. But you can't with a two-year-old. In fact, I was watching a crime show this week and I heard an eminent psychologist explain, this will make you laugh, that there is actually, now this is the actual words of the psychologist and this is what she said on this crime show. She said there is actually, and I quote, very little difference between the behavior of the average teenager and a psychopath. I didn't say it, she said it. They cited lack of empathy for others, wanting their own way, and defiance. Are we close? Some teenagers display pretty much all the character traits of psychopaths, bar the killing bit. But, you know, I think that we can laugh about it, but the point of it is we are all doing things differently. I want to show you how to divide your house. Because if you want to really ruin your life and mess up your house, this is how you can do it. These are the steps to a divided house. Jesus said in Mark chapter 3, you remember this, 24 and 25, if a kingdom is divided against itself, the kingdom cannot stand. If a house is divided against itself, the house cannot stand. So how does a house, any house, a church, a home, a family, become divided? Well, usually division in the home starts with a difference of opinion. Maybe on finances, ouch, says the guys. Maybe on disciplining kids, ouch, says the girls. But then it escalates beyond all proportion and beyond all control. So here are some of the steps you can take if you want to destroy your life and ruin your family. I'm hoping you're thinking in reverse as we go through this, because Jesus says a house divided will not stand. Number one, the difference of opinion. Disunity starts with a difference of opinion. And let's face it, we all have differences of opinion, don't we? Is that true? My wife and I often differ in our opinions, and it upsets me that she can be wrong so often. Only kidding. Careful what you say, you will suffer later. But one of the great plots of the evil one right now, right across our society, outside of families and everything, is that the evil one right now is allowing everybody to think that their opinion actually matters. I call it the Facebook phenomenon. Because think about Facebook. Right? Never before has so much ranting been done so excessively by so many with so little point. Years ago, we used to feel like the little guy never got a say. His voice was never heard. But today, every idiot with a smartphone can voice the most ridiculous ideas anytime, anywhere. And Google picks up on them. It's amazing, isn't it? The explosion of knowledge. Everyone has an opinion on everything all of the time. So opinions are like noses. Everyone's got one, and most of them smell. It's true. Everybody has hundreds of opinions on everything. So division, whether in the church or whether in business or your family, often starts with a difference of opinion. And it's not wrong to disagree or to have opposing opinions to your spouse, to your child. How many of you know you've had opposing opinions to your child? You know, when I was 18, I thought my dad knew nothing. I thought he was completely ignorant. By the time I was 21, I was amazed at what he'd picked up in 3 years. Because when you're younger, you kind of think you know everything. And of course, you know zilch, really. It's not wrong to disagree or have an opposing opinion, but it's how we express this opinion that makes all the difference. Proverbs 18 verse 2 says this, "A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion." That is the Facebook verse. Expressing his opinion. So the second thing is wanting to be right. Once I was having an argument with Fiona once, and yes, we do argue. We do. It's true. I'm human. We don't see eye to eye on everything. We're having an argument, and she said this one time, "When we argue, you always think you're right." And I said, "Of course, because if I didn't think I was right, I wouldn't be arguing." Does that make sense? No one argues when they think they're wrong. You argue when you think you're right. We all want to be right all of the time. Is this true? We all think we're right all of the time, or pretty much. So this leads to the third point, which is choosing being right over love. While we all want to be right, it should be more important that we love one another rather than being right about an issue. Jesus said in John 13 verse 34, "A new commandment I give you, love one another. All men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another." He didn't say, "All men will know if you are my disciples if you argue for the right." He said, "If you love one another." Whenever there's any conflict in the home, and it's inevitable that there will be some, unless you live by yourself, in which case you'll probably find yourself arguing with yourself anyway about something. Whenever there's a conflict or difference of opinion, you face a choice. Do you fight for what you believe is right, or do you show love and grace towards the other party? Now, some of you can relate to that, and some of you have a tremendous sense within you of right and wrong, and that's fine. But you can love someone and still disagree with them. How many of you know that? This has been, our media doesn't know this. Our media and our parliament don't get this, that you can love someone and actually disagree with them. You know, I love many people in this world, and some of them are homosexuals and some of them are transgender, and I don't agree with what they're doing, but I love them anyway. Because you can love someone without agreeing with them. Disunity occurs when we choose that we want to be right more than we want to be reconciled. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 verse 7, he's writing about lawsuits among believers. But listen to what he says. "To have lawsuits at all with one another is already a defeat for you. Why not rather suffer wrong? Why not rather be defamed?" And I would say that sometimes in our relationships, why not be right, but maintain unity? Is it that important to be right? Now, some issues, definitely it's important to be right on. But why not, you know, give a little bit and maintain unity instead of digging your heels in and insisting that you're right? Though I'm not saying that you become a doormat where you give in all the time to the others. But you can believe you're right and still treat the other party with respect and honor and still be in unity. However, what often happens is one party will insist on something and insist on their way is right. The other party backs down every time. And then you have really an abusive situation where one side capitulates all the time and people start growing apart. That's not unity. Unity says you can agree to disagree agreeably. Does that make sense? But when we put wanting to be right above loving people, we're in trouble. The fourth way of destroying unity in your home is to react rather than respond. What's the difference? So many of us react rather than respond. We don't like things. We have a disagreement. We feel hurt, we feel overlooked, we feel persecuted, and we have this sort of knee-jerk reaction, which should be just shortened to jerk reaction, because really, we act like jerks a lot of times here. Now, if you know anything about medical thing, everybody sort of cross your legs for me. And if you hit this area right here, just give it a good hard, your own, don't hit your partner's, but hit your leg there, and you'll find your leg kicks out and you don't even think about it. Is that right? That's called a knee-jerk response. And the reason it's actually called a reflex, because the signal doesn't even make it to your brain. It only goes to your spinal cord and back. And so you don't even think about it. It's just the response is there. You can't control it. It involves a nervous reflex that bypasses your brain. It goes straight to your spinal cord and back without conscious thought. Now, as a general rule, when you feel offended or upset or attacked or whatever, the first reaction is neither the most productive nor is it the one you want. Every time you face conflict, you've got to think about this. Now, if you faced every conflict and before you said, hang on, before we launch into this fight, we're going to have half an hour out to sit down, have a cup of coffee and think about it, you would come back with a much more rational and controlled and more balanced approach. Am I right? But in the heat of the battle, we tend to react rather than respond. If we took the time to respond properly, we will preserve unity far better than if we explode all over the other one because we're offended or not happy. This technique, taking a bit of time out and thinking about it, this technique works with kids, it works with wives, it works with bosses, it even works with pastors. So it works with anybody, because usually your first response is not the one you want. Proverbs 19 verse 11 says this, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is to his glory to overlook an offense. Is that incredible that the Bible teaches on this? Now, the fifth thing you can do after reacting and responding is holding on to the offense. This is the clincher. If you want to ruin unity in your home, this is the number one thing you can do. You hold on to offense. You don't let it go. You're like a dog with a bone. If you want to ruin your family, ruin your church, ruin anything else, never let go of offense. Luke 17 says this. Luke 17 verse 3 and 4 says this. Pay attention to yourselves. If your brother sins, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you seven times in the day and turns to you seven times saying, I repent, you must forgive him. See, Jesus is saying we need to forgive one another, not hold on to it. And frankly, some of us are really bad at this. Why should you forgive them so many times? Does this mean Jesus doesn't care if you're right? No. I mean, Jesus does care if you're right. Many men tell me that they married the girl that they knew was Miss Right for them, but they didn't realize her first name was Always. And it's sometimes like that. We think we're always right. But it's not that Jesus doesn't care. Jesus commands you to forgive others because if you don't do this, it hurts you more than it hurts them, or it destroys unity wherever you go. Not forgiving someone, hanging on to an offense, is like drinking poison, hoping the other guy dies. It doesn't work that way. Glug, 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 clunk. Oh, it doesn't work that way. You're drinking your own poison. I have branches of my extended family. I've met with them recently. This is like cousins and stuff like that, who haven't spoken to each other for years. So I'd say to them, how's so-and-so? I haven't seen him for ages. Oh, yeah, we haven't spoken to him for 5 years. Wow. And the guys I was talking to, everybody is not speaking to everybody else for years. I have branches of my family, God bless them all, that write wills, including the kids of the moment in the will. And there's a saying amongst all of the kids, uh-oh, I'm out of the will now if you do something wrong. This is terrible, holding on to these offenses, and it hurts them deeply and it hurts everybody deeply. If you have long-term issues with your spouse or with your kids, pray and swallow your need to be right no matter what and forgive them, because forgiveness creates unity. Look at Paul's advice in Ephesians 4 verse 26. Look at this. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger and give no opportunity for the devil. Now, you may not be able to settle every argument on the day, But it's a good thing to aim at, mind you. But what Paul is saying is don't hold on to your anger. What he's saying is forgive. Because if you don't forgive, it gives the devil a foothold in your life. And it's the same in church. If we don't forgive one another, he gets a foothold in our church. You are better off giving it to the Lord and letting him sort it out than hanging on to it and feeling self-justified but miserable and alienated. All of this leads to number six in how to destroy unity in your home, going cold. If you choose to hold on to offense long enough, something within you begins to die. Your relationship begins to die. Now, Revelation 2, verses 4 to 5. Have a look at this verse because you'll know it. It's a great verse in Revelation 2. It's written to a church, but it applies to all of us and especially to families. It says this, "But I have this against you, that you have forsaken your first love. Remember, therefore, the height from which you've fallen. Repent and do the works you did at first." Now, the church at Ephesus, they were doing really good things. They looked pious. They looked godly. They they were going from strength to strength. They were successful. But the Lord looked at them and said, "You've forsaken your first love. You've lost your first love. You've let it die." So what does it mean, first love? That sense of wonder that we all have when we first fall in love. Husbands and wives, we need to not forsake our first love. When you have conflict or disharmony, it's really tempting to focus on the conflict or the disharmony of the day. But often that's not even the real issue. There's some other issue that's like manifesting out there. But we tend to just gloss it over, sweep it under the carpet, turn up at church smiling, but I would urge you to look back at your life, look at your relationship, and look at your first love. Now, I'm not talking about the gooey feeling that you felt when you saw your partner for your first time. Some of you might have felt that. Some of you may not have. We were talking about it last night at the date night. You know, have you ever been like in youth group and this new girl walks in and this guy's looking at her and he rolls his eyes and to her and she rolls them back, you know? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what you felt, what you experienced, what you promised when you stood before the altar. Because that's when you really made that commitment. And what about you mums and dads? What about when you first held that little baby? You remember holding that little baby, looking in that baby's eyes and how beautiful he or she was? That's the same one who's grown up and you're now fighting with. So remember that first love. Going cold towards another person, giving them the cold shoulder or the silent treatment doesn't solve the problem. It spells doom. It really does. You need to be honest and open and have frank discussions without threats, screaming or cursing. And if you have conflicts with your kids, sit them down and talk to them about it. If you have conflicts with your teenagers, let me tell you the one word they're going to say back to you. Whatever. Is that true? But they will appreciate that you've sat down and spoken to them. If you have conflict between yourselves as married couple, sit and have a cup of coffee and talk about it. Now, the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, you are not alone. I know we feel alone when we talk about this, but we're not alone because struggling in marriage or family relationships is happening right across society, especially in the church, because the enemy's attacking. The best way to destroy the ministry of this church is to mess up the families within it. Now, you may not feel like your family is being destroyed, but I can tell you from my family's point of view, we're feeling the pressure at times. Is anybody here feeling the pressure? As a husband and wife, as parents, as children, sometimes you feel the pressure of that relationship with your parents. Now, Fiona and I are going away camping this week because when we're here, we get so busy that we often spend zero time together. It's true. I am terrible at that. And we are going away camping, two workaholics going away camping, and it's great. Fiona loves it because there's no phone signal and there's no internet. I think I'm stepping into the dark ages. She thinks it's awesome. And I mentioned to you the other week, we go camping. We set up the little caravan we got and stuff. I said, "What do we do now?" She said, "Well, we read a book." Okay, great. Yep, good. Done that. What do we do now? "Well, we just sit here." Okay, what do we do now? I'm a human doing. Not a human being. I'm a doing, but she's a human being. She wants to just be. And it takes me about a day and I kind of unwind. Can anybody relate to that? Yeah, because we're caught up in the rat race. Even if it's good stuff, even if it's church and good stuff, it's still a rat race. And the problem with the rat race is that even if you win, you're a rat. So we don't want to be in a rat race. We want to be better than that. Let me tell you some steps towards how you can relieve the pressure of the enemy attacking your family. And these are really important. If you're taking notes, these are really important. How to achieve unity in your home. Number one is to pray protection over your family. Psalm 57 verse 1 says this, "Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by." We sang earlier, the shadow of your wings. And if you've ever seen a hen just putting her wings around her little brood, is about protection. And that's what the Lord longs to do, to put his arms around you, to protect you and to love you when the pressure is building. Your Heavenly Father longs to protect you, as we sang, and hide you in the shadow of his wings. But the first thing you should do is to pray for your family and pray for the blood of Jesus to cover your family. Because it's like what Chris was talking about earlier with the Passover. They put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost and the enemy passed over. The angel of death passed over in the 10th plague. And the angel of death, the enemy, the Satan himself, will pass over you if you pray the blood around your family. Does that make sense? Okay. Praying together as a family is also a great idea. Pray with your kids. Pray with your partner. But if your partner's not a Christian or your kids aren't Christian, that's not really an option. But the family, if you can pray together, the family that prays together stays together. It works really well. The second thing you can do to establish unity in your home is to draw near to God. James 4 verse 7 says this, "Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you." And that's his promise. Get into your daily quiet times, listen to podcasts and sermons, read Christian books. If you do everything you possibly can to draw close to God, he promises to draw near to you. And a lot of these other, we sang that old hymn, you know, often, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face." And what happens? The things of earth grow. Strange, it's so true. If you get into God, then the other things around you start to come into perspective and start to right themselves because you are closer to God. Try it. If you have disunity in your family, try it at the moment. If you are single and you're wondering about finding a partner in life, don't chase other partners. Okay? Just be the best person you can be, as close to the Lord as you can be, and God will bring someone along at the appropriate time. But don't go out there playing the field. It's a disaster. So get into your quiet times and draw closer to God. Number three, this one's going to hurt. Guard your mouth. How many of you put your mouth into gear before your brain goes into gear? My hand is firmly, I'm the only one. Wow. That's amazing. If you have issues with your family members, pray, don't say. James 3 verse 5 says this, "The tongue is a small part of the body, yet it makes great boasts. How great a forest is set on fire by a small spark." How many of you know that in your homes and families? It doesn't take much. How many of us have created havoc with the rash words we have spoken in anger? How many times have we said things in anger or frustration that we will later regret? My hand is firmly raised. In fact, sometimes you don't even say it. Sometimes you just, I have like this sigh. And I don't even say anything. And Fiona says, "Can we do this?" And I go, "All right." And I don't have to say no. She can read. She's a trained expert. She can read between the lines and know that, okay. And I don't even know I'm doing it. It's so scary. It's like a lie detector test. You can't pick it up. You can't change it. It just kind of pokes out every so often. Bill Newman, my friend, tells the story of a woman who'd been saying horrible things about her pastor. And she went to the pastor. She felt convicted. And she came to the pastor and she said, "Pastor, I apologize for all the bad words I've said about you. Will you forgive me?" And he said, "Yes, of course I forgive you. But before I do, I want you to do one thing. She said, anything, Pastor, anything. He said, would you take a pillow? Take it up onto the mountain that is in our little town. Would you cut the pillow open and throw all the feathers in the air? And she said, well, that's a bit weird for penance. We're not even Catholic. But anyway, I'll do it anyway. So up she went, cut open the pillow, threw the feathers everywhere. They all floated across the town. She came back. She said, Pastor, I've done that. He said, fantastic. Would you do one last thing for me? She said, what's that? He said, would you go and pick them all up again for me? That's what our words are like. You see, he was illustrating that. That's what our words are like. Proverbs 18 verse 21 says this, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. So watch what you say. Watch how you say it. Because you want to speak words of life over your family, not words of destruction. Am I right? When I'm counseling with people before we marry them, I teach them two phrases to use. To say, I'm sorry, and to say, I love you, and to say them often. So, I mean, I teach them to say, I love you. Everyone needs to know that they're loved, don't they? So we should say, I love you to people we care about, our children, our partners. We need to say, I love you more and more. We also need to say, I'm sorry. And as a guy, this is really hard to do. Am I the only guy who has trouble saying, I'm sorry? Oh, clearly I am. Remember Fonzie? Back in, you know, Fonzie, say I'm sorry. He couldn't say it because saying sorry is really hard to do, but we need to say it because we're not perfect. We blow it. So we should remember those two phrases, but don't run them together. I'm sorry, I love you. That doesn't work at all. Keep them separate in what you say. Number four is to open lines of communication. If the situation is explosive, you may have to back off a little bit to allow time to respond appropriately. But this doesn't mean, when I say back off a bit, I don't mean for days, weeks, months, or years. Talking about a small amount of time so you can respond. To resolve anything, you will need to talk. Guys, you will need to talk. We don't just use this for eating, guys. We use it for communicating, and we need to talk. And we need to do so openly and honestly. And guys in particular, don't run and hide in the shed. Make time to, or in my case, schedule time to talk. Because women like it when let me ask you a question, ladies. Do you like it when the guys open up and talk? Do you like it when they talk about their heartfelt desires and their hurts and their pain and everything? Do you like that? Listen, guys. When I say talk, I'm not talking football. Right? I'm not talking, you know, talk about the latest special down at Bunnings or something. I'm talking about opening your heart and actually talking about how you feel. Because I'm a guy too. I don't know how I feel half the time. I'm married to a counselor. Can you imagine how frustrating that is? She's a trained counselor. I'm a guy. I get up in the morning. I turn to her rather. I say, good morning, sweetheart. How am I feeling today? Because I don't know. And she'll say, you said this because you feel this way. I go, huh? No, I didn't. I literally don't know. So guys, we need to talk and put it out there. I heard of a couple who were in counseling one time. Old couple, married for years, and they were having these problems. And the woman turned to the counselor and said, he never tells me he loves me. And the counselor turned to the man and said, is that true? And the man said this, I told her I loved her when we got married, and if I ever change my mind, I'll let her know. Because that's how guys do a lot. We need to say, I love you and I'm sorry, and we need to communicate, don't we? Ephesians 4 verse 29 says this, because we need to communicate the right way. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. We need to speak words that build others up, doesn't destroy them. So let me finish with this. You face a choice this morning. Now look, I know we all, myself included, have said rough things to each other. As couples, we've said rough things to our kids at times, to our parents at times. Is that true? I keep thinking I'm the only one here. You're very quiet. Especially when we're under pressure. How many of you know when you have a bad day, you tend to say rougher things? Is that true? And when you have a great day, you come home full of nice words. We've got to watch that. Changes in your family and relationships, any sort of changes, start with a decision and a commitment, if you will. You can fall into love again. You can have the relationship that you want with your parents, with your children, whatever. But you have to decide to do it. Remember, the devil is out to bring you down, and the little foxes spoil the vine. Those little irritations, neglected and glossed over, will fester and will start to wreak havoc in time. So I'm going to ask you this morning to be honest. Is there pressure in your marriage? Is there pressure in your family relationships, between you and your children, between maybe you and your parents, whatever it is? Is there pressure within your families? Because I believe that for many of us, there is a lot of pressure on us at the moment. Have you exploded or ignored or withdrawn from the most important relationships you have? Now, Valentine's Day this week was all about love, but that's not really love. That's infatuation. Love is actually a commitment, and a commitment requires a choice. Ideally, you commit to each other. But if one party is too angry to do this, why don't you be the bigger party and commit to loving them anyway? Deuteronomy 30 verse 19 says this: I call heaven and earth as witnesses to you this day that I've set before you life and death, blessings and cursings. And in case you can't figure it out, it says this: now choose life. We choose life by making that commitment. Satan's attacking our families, but we won't stand for it, will we? I don't want to lose one marriage in this church. I don't want to lose one family member in this church, one child. I want to be fully committed to each other and to the Lord in His service. But if you have tension in your home, undue pressure in your home and in your marriage or your relationships, I'm going to ask something of you this morning. So I'm going to ask you to bow your heads and pray. But I believe God's been speaking to us this morning, because the pressure is on. If you have felt pressure on your home, on your family, between husband and wife, between you and the kids, or between you and your parents, whatever it is, if that is you, I'm going to ask you to stand right now. I am the first one to be standing. I'm standing right here because we have had pressure on our lives and on our marriage. So if that's you, I'm going to ask you to stand right now. Chapter 4 verse 1 says this: therefore, I urge you as a prisoner of the Lord to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace.
You've been listening to Pastor Darren Brown from Ignite Christian Church on the Sunshine Coast of Queensland, Australia. For more great teaching and information, visit www.ignitechurch.org.au.